From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call us now at 800-462-7413. Zorba, along with the calls.
Yes. Breastfeeding. Are we overselling breastfeeding?
That's we talk about that a lot on the program.
We do. And there's some research and there's some articles in the New York Times. Big topic open to discussion. And red meat. We've heard about it. Is it bad for us? How do we put this into perspective compared to other risk factors that we have?
Mm-hmm. That's relatively new research. What's our recipe?
Mediterranean veggie wraps. It is a non-meat recipe that is very good.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. On we go now, Zorba, to Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, Dr. Zorba.
Sure. How can we help?
I had some routine blood screening through a wellness program at my job this summer, and my test results actually came back really good. I've lost a lot of weight, and I've been able to come off almost all of my medications, so I'm actually doing really well.
By the way,
thank you.
Congratulations. You have worked hard at this, and so kudos.
Yep.
Kudos.
Thank you. But there was one kind of weird anomaly in that blood screening, and I went back to my primary care doctor, and she tested me a few times, weeks apart and then a couple of months apart, and that's a high indirect bilirubin mm-hmm. count.
Mm-hmm.
And she has since sent me on to a gastroenterologist uh-huh. who diagnosed me with Gilbert syndrome.
Uh-huh.
So I'm told that it's genetic. Apparently, mm-hmm. I was born
with
it.
That's right.
It's also pretty harmless. But
absolutely harmless. 100% good. Harmless. And I want to talk a little bit about this in a broader sense. First of all, sure. Gilbert syndrome means nothing. It means you have a high bilirubin. That's all it means. And it leads to nothing. I don't remember what percentage of the population. It might be 2% or 3% mm-hmm. have it. And the real issue is, why do we care about it? Well, it's because we measure it. So it's a good example of a worthless measurement that we happen to have on a screening test called a comprehensive metabolic panel. Now, it's not worthless in that it will pick up people who might have cirrhosis and other things. And those numbers are much higher. You would have a bilirubin of 4 or 5. And there are a variety of other medical syndromes that pick it up. But here it is. You have an abnormality. And then people worry about it, rightfully so. They go, well, what's wrong with this? And now that we have an electronic medical record, in our office we have the best EMR existing Epic. I say that, of course, because it's homegrown in Madison, but it really is an excellent, excellent system. It's a wonderful system that I think is the best system. And what it allows people to look at their labs. So I had a person in the other day in my office and said, why is my bilirubin high? And I said, well, it's high because you have Gilbert syndrome. And they said, what's that? And I, you know, went to the EMR and pumped out some information for her. And then I said, let's look back. And we looked back 15 years ago because our labs are on our EMR 15 years ago. And lo and behold, it's exactly the same number. It hasn't altered at all. So your primary care doctor was correct. And in fact, you don't even need a gastroenterologist to tell you. All you have to do is look at the other liver enzymes when they're normal and you follow this over time. And sometimes they'll do an ultrasound of the liver to make sure that you aren't starting out with something else going on.
They did do an ultrasound.
That's about what they do. And the ultrasound was, I take it, was normal.
Everything was fine, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got it. You just, all you have is a lab test that's outside of normal. That's the way to think of it. You have nothing wrong with you. You just have a lab test outside of your normal. You've had the workup. Take it, put it in the back of your mind, and don't think about it. Not easy to do all the time, but the reality is I'm not concerned at all.
Do you think, I've heard about or read about a possible beneficial side effect of having a high bilirubin count
mm-hmm.
because they say that bilirubin is an antioxidant. So having this antioxidant, you know, hanging out for longer in your bloodstream might prevent, you know, future cardiovascular problems. What do you think about that?
I think it's quackery. I don't think it does anything at all. What happens is it has to do with the fact that bilirubin is conjugated. It's a term that we use for how bilirubin is actually, how our body actually does it. Because bilirubin is a byproduct of, it's used in the liver. It's an important thing that we have. And I won't go into the manufacturing of it because Tom would then go to sleep in the middle of the middle of the show, and then I wouldn't be able to continue.
I never go to sleep on your show.
Yeah, it's too boring. But the reality is, you have an enzymatic difference, and that's all it is. I don't think it protects you for anything. I'm sorry, but it doesn't harm you either. So,
thanks. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Appreciate the call.
And
thanks
keep up the good work. Congratulations.
800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, we talk a lot on this program about breastfeeding.
Absolutely.
Always in a positive way.
Absolutely.
And now here's research that questions whether breastfeeding is being oversold in this country.
Well, let's look at the history of breastfeeding. Let's go back to caveman times. Back when I was in medical school, breastfeeding was almost considered a communist plot. If a woman wanted to breastfeed, she was considered to be strange and abnormal. Only hippie mothers would breastfeed. Why would you want to breastfeed? If you bottle feed, you will keep your girlish figure. I'm serious. That's exactly what the advertising was. And also, bottle feeding was so much easier. All you have to do is get Similac and Enfamil, give it to your baby, and it goes on and on. And so breastfeeding was actually discouraged. It certainly was not encouraged.
Now it's turned around.
Well, now it's turned around. Now it's encouraged. So there are a number of issues. First of all, not every mother can breastfeed, but most mothers can breastfeed. So I think it's important to say if you can't breastfeed, that's okay. There are other things that you can do. My mother was one of those women. And so for the first month of life, she hired a wet nurse. And I don't know what a wet nurse
is. Yeah, I do.
But a wet nurse was a woman who had a child and would the child was done breastfeeding and would breastfeed me. I don't remember the wet nurse.
I don't remember either.
My mother had a picture of this woman who breastfed, and I have no idea where the picture is. I remember the picture because she showed it to me years later. She also had a nurse in the house for a couple of days who was dressed. Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. It was dressed like in a white hat and white clothes, and it was black and white. I have no idea what that was. Anyway, getting back to breastfeeding.
Yeah.
There are some who say breastfeeding is, it really isn't all it's cracked up to be, that we should breastfeed, a baby should be breastfed for a month or two, which is completely going against what I think is the majority of the research. The question is, how long do you breastfeed? There's another question of whether or not pumping your milk is the same as breastfeeding, which it isn't. And so that's where all of this sort of controversy comes. I think exclusively breastfeeding your child for 6 months, if you are able to do it, giving your child breast milk only for the first 6 months, I am still on top of that and believe, if possible, that is the best way to treat your child.
I think this research, is that the right word? It isn't exactly research.
Well,
was concerned about a negative effect on the women who weren't breastfeeding.
I think you're
feeling
right.
Guilty about
Right. Well, how do you encourage something when a lot of people can do it, but not everyone can do it? And where do you put that into a balance? You want to say breast milk is best because that's the case. Well, what if you can't do it? So I think it's a good example of, if you can't breastfeed, and one of the issues about breastfeeding is the health of the baby. The other issue is whether or not breastfeeding increases IQ points. Well, there's something else we know that increases IQ points tremendously. That's reading to your baby and talking to your baby. We know that, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the more you actually use words with your baby and interact with your baby, the more the baby develops in terms of brain and IQ. So I think if you can't breastfeed, you handle it the other way by increasing your discussion with the baby. And then when you're talking about health and wellness, if you are going to bottle feed your baby, then you bottle feed and you're scrupulous about how you bottle feed your baby, and that's what you do. But I think encouraging breastfeeding is still best. And I'll tell you, when I do my newspaper articles about breastfeeding, I have had pushback from women who have said, I'm advocating for a friend of mine who could not breastfeed, and she feels guilty about the fact that she couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you do the best you can.
Yep. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's welcome a caller in Wausau, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, Tom and Dr. Zorba?
Pretty good. How can we help?
Listen, okay, in a nutshell, I'm a classical pianist, and I also collect clocks. I had a medieval clock with a 5-pound rock fall on a steel plate that I had to protect the floor from it breaking through the floor.
Wait a minute.
Wait a second.
Say that again.
Time out. Say this again.
All right. I have a medieval clock. It's like a 15th century reproduction clock, and it has a 5-pound rock that you use to power the clock. The rock fell, hit that plate, and damaged the cochlea of my right ear. I have a constant, horrible leaf blower sound that is this note on my piano. It's not funny.
It's not funny, but I have to tell you something. I have people who talk to me about tinnitus, which is the ringing in the ear, but
right.
Never, ever, ever have I had somebody tell me this is the sound of the note and play the note on a piano. No one has ever.
Well, I'll tell you, it's an octave above middle C, which is a really low range for tinnitus. Hmm. I've had tinnitus for 30 years. I used to manage one of the Rolling Stones, believe it or not, and I've had a lot of, you know, exposure to sound, mm-hmm. and I'm a musician myself, mm-hmm. and it's basically the sound of a leaf blower in my ear, mm-hmm. that pitch. It's that loud. Mm-hmm. I went to my ENT. He got me in right away. He put me on 40 milligrams of prednisone.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
I didn't sleep for over a month. Mm-hmm. I didn't wean off of it. I heard you're supposed to wean off of it. Mm-hmm. I didn't wean off of it. I got ill. Then I started taking it again because I had stopped because I couldn't stand it. Basically, I am left with horrible distortions in my right ear. The human voice also and my voice itself mm-hmm. are almost unlistenable to me in that ear. It's awful.
Yeah, this is terrible. Let me ask you, how long ago did this happen?
3 months ago.
Okay, so we're 3 months into it. It has not changed at all, correct?
Okay, I would say it has changed about 30%.
Uh-huh, okay.
The distortions have become less, uh-huh. but like vowel sounds, mm-hmm. you know, like in speech, mm-hmm. vowel sounds are like, it's like the Charlie Brown characters, uh-huh. the adults in the cartoon. And I have not played. My goal was to retire mm-hmm. and buy a piano, which I spent $25,000 on, mm-hmm. and spent another $25,000 restoring it. It was incredible. I had three people from around mm-hmm. the country working on it, and it's the most beautiful piano in Wisconsin. And I had 2 days with it before this happened. And I have not played since. The note you heard mm-hmm. me play mm-hmm. is one of the only notes I've played in almost 2 months.
Well, I've got a couple thoughts about this.
Okay.
The first thought is I would want to find out. I would get an MRI, and I would do an MRI to make sure there's nothing going on in the cochlea that's coincidental with this. That's a question. Do you have something such as an acoustic neuroma, which can produce a weird and strange sounds? So I would do that. I would rule it out.
Okay.
Next thing I would do is I would go on Sudafed. I would take Sudafed, which
I
may
just
open.
I threw that out.
Yeah, well, I would take it. I would took it out of the garbage, and I would take Sudafed, and I would take 30,
doing that right now.
And I would take picking it out of the garbage. We won't listen to the notes of that. 30 milligrams 3 times a day and see what that would do.
Okay.
Next step. Let's make an assumption that this is something that may occur and you want to get it out of your brain as much. I would engage in cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, and I would find a CBT therapist in your area. And the reason is you can learn within your brain to actually begin to ignore and decrease sounds that exist there. There's no doubt about it, and I'll give you the perfect example. When I have people in my office and they need a hearing aid and they say, well, I don't want to use it. I don't want a hearing aid because my friends say when they put it in their ears, it gets to be too noisy. And I then tell them to be quiet for 10 seconds in the office. And I'll ask them if they hear anything. And they usually hear the hum of the fan of the computer that I'm next to. Now, when I was talking to them, they didn't hear that hum. That hum actually still existed in their ears. That sensory actually was in their ears. They could hear it, but they had learned to ignore the hum because they were listening to my voice. In other words, and they didn't have to think about it. In other words, it was automatic. But after I mentioned the hum, I asked them if they still hear it about 10 or 15 seconds later, and they say, yeah, I'm listening to the hum, because now they're listening
to
the hum.
They're focused on it.
Well, they're focused on it, and with cognitive behavioral therapy, you can learn how to unfocus to things.
Okay, can I want to tell you one more thing. They put me on Klonopin, and I'll tell you what, it's made a huge, massive difference.
Well, that may be useful. Well, you may also may be useful. Klonopin is useful sometimes in the short run, sometimes in the long run. Antidepressants in small doses at bedtime might also be useful too. And this is all getting your brain to ignore the sound. But I would do CBT also.
What do you think about hearing aids and this Beltone place said that they can come out with a laptop and I can play the piano and they can attenuate. Yeah. What do you think of that?
I would do that last.
Last?
I would not do that first. I would, if it were me, I would engage in cognitive behavioral therapy. And the reason is you're a pianist. What you hear is very important, and what you ignore, such as sounds in the audience when you're playing, because you know
no
how
audience.
To ignore that.
Yeah, there's no audience.
But if there is an audience, you would know how to ignore it, or if there's a sound in another room. I would do CBT, and I would do 10 sessions, and you'll know in 10 sessions whether or not it works. That would be part of the plan.
And how would I go about finding one? There's two psychiatrists in Wausau.
Yeah,
two.
Yeah. Well, I would. There are a few things I would do. I would call up one of the psychiatrists and ask them. But I would also, I would look on the web and look up cognitive behavioral therapy. You may have to travel 50 miles. I would call them up and say, I've got a ringing in my ears. This is a sound I want to get rid of. How long have you been doing CBT? And you give us a call back in 3 months and let us know what happens.
Give it
a good 3 months.
And thanks a lot, you guys. And you guys have a great day, and I'll do everything you said. Hey, what are the normal milligrams of Sudafeds? I don't have the
30,
packages.
They're all the same, 30 milligrams three times a day. They'll make you sign for it because they want to make sure you're not a Breaking Bad guy who's manufacturing meth.
Yep. Yep.
So you have to sign for that.
Well, maybe I could do that instead of play the piano. I'll let you know my progress. All right. Hey, guys.
Thanks.
Have a great one. Thank you so much, so very much.
We really appreciate the call.
He may become a future Walter White.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
But a lot of our listeners do.
I know that's true. Before we take a break, Zorba, let's hear from your favorite backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. I've got to say, I love this one, Zorba. Today's correction comes to us from Barbara of Wichita, Kansas, who listens to the show on KMUW. She writes, Dr. Zorba, I have heard you often use the singular verb or pronoun with the plural word data. Data isn't, data are. Here are some other examples of words often misused. Curriculum is, curricula are, medium is, media are, data is, data are. In graduate school, my statistics professor pointed out the data dilemma, and I have made my mission to pass it along. Because of that, Professor, whenever I hear data used wrongly, I get shivers down my spine. I guess this might be a case of ignorance is bliss. I enjoyed the show very much. Thank you for your wisdom, and thank Tom for his comments.
I thank Tom for his comments. I love that, too. It sounds to me like when we say data is, that it's like putting your fingers on a blackboard and scratching as it goes
down. A lot of this, I think, has gone the way of the wind. It's the real singular and plural have been erased, and data has become singular and plural.
Well, what happens is
media.
Yeah.
That drives me nuts. Yeah. Media is plural. Oh, but media. We use it as a single.
Oh, that drives you nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's because you're a radio jock. That's why it drives you nuts. Language is mobile. Language is mutable. Language changes. And the reality is,
it changes too much.
Thank you for your comment. And Tom, I want to thank you for your comment, too.
Oh, you're welcome. Do you have data issues? Send your petty grievances along.
Petty? We're not calling them petty. They're educated. Send your educated grievances to Zorba@WPR.org or simply post it on Facebook.
Guess what? We have our recipe coming up. You'll love it. More of your calls, of course, a medical myth buster too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. The Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, we check Mediterranean veggie wraps.
That's right. Now, I know, Tom, you love vegetables. You hardly ever eat meat because you're a veggie person. Right?
I am turning into more of a veggie person.
So what motivated you to become more of a veggie person? I mean, and I said that obviously in a joke with meat, but you've always been kind of meat-oriented.
It took me a while to figure out it's healthier.
It took you a while.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what happens. You know, it's a transition in our society. Society. And I think it's an important thing to look at, because, you know, reduction of meat is good. And this is a good example of a tasty, delicious dish. We know the Mediterranean diet, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the best research around, makes us healthier and has us live longer. People on an enriched Mediterranean diet, enriched means a handful of nuts every day in addition to a Mediterranean diet, and 2 to 3 ounces of olive oil, have a reduction in heart disease that is significant and almost the same as Lipitor. Mm. So I think it's really important to look at that. Okay, so let's start out with one small red onion sliced into rings.
One small red onion sliced into rings.
Now, do you notice a difference in onions when you taste them at all?
No.
You know, some people say, well, this one is really sweet, that one is really hot.
But some are prettier than others.
Some are definitely prettier than others, no doubt. 2 red bell peppers halved and seeded.
2 red bell peppers halved and seeded.
2 portobello mushrooms stems removed.
2 portobello mushrooms stems removed.
You know, I never saw portobellos when I was a kid, ever. A tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil. A tablespoonful and an extra teaspoon of balsamic vinegar. Teaspoon of kosher salt.
A little tea kosher salt.
4 whole wheat tortilla wraps.
4 whole wheat tortilla wraps.
Yeah, and if you want to use a corn wrap or a regular wheat wrap, you could do that too. 1/4 cup of crumbled feta cheese.
1/4 cup crumbled feta cheese.
Now, I've tasted low-fat and regular feta cheese, and they taste relatively similar, but using very little regular feta, I think it has more robust taste. Mm-hmm. And 1/4 cup of Greek yogurt, fat-free Greek yogurt.
1/4 cup. Fat-free Greek yogurt.
So let's make it.
Good.
Preheat the grill on high heat. Drizzle the bell peppers, onions with some oil, with the olive oil, a tablespoonful of balsamic vinegar, and sprinkle with salt. Place all the veggies on the grill, and I've got a little square thing with holes in it for the grill. In fact, we'll post the picture on our website so people can look at this if they want to, of what I use, because I've got a little grill thing that I put in that makes it really easy to do this. Cook cook it for 3 to 5 minutes on each side until the veggies are soft. Remove from the grill. Allow it to cook to cool slightly. Then thinly slice the mushrooms and bell peppers. Separate the onions into thin onion rings. And in a small bowl, mix together the yogurt and that teaspoon of balsamic vinegar, a little sprinkling of balsamic vinegar. Yeah. Then spread 1 tablespoonful of the yogurt onto the wrap. Divide the veggies that have been grilled evenly between the tortilla on the tortilla wraps. Top with a little feta cheese and roll it up like a burrito. And it's really good. You've got the taste of feta, balsamic vinegar, and grilled vegetables.
We've talked about wraps before. I don't like wraps because I get it all over me.
You get it all over you. So you mean because you're slovenly when you eat?
You could say that. You just did say
that. How about a juicy burger? Do you get a juicy burger all over you when you eat a juicy burger?
I haven't had a juicy burger in a long while.
How about soup? How about if you're eating soup?
I can eat soup all over you. You have a spoon you can eat with.
How about like cereal? Do you spill cereal? Put something that, you know, that's what napkins are developed for. You put a napkin on yourself, you know. You just put that into there.
I would ever eat this, how can I get the recipe?
Go to ZorbaPastor.org, and there you can get this recipe. You can get other recipes. You can see pictures of Tom and me. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Don't forget, we're on Facebook, and we're going to post on our Facebook page a picture of the grill thing. I have no idea what you call it. The grill thing that I use on my grill for veggies, because if you don't have one, I recommend that you buy one. They last forever.
I thought you were going to say you'll post a picture of me with stuff all over my...
No, we'll do that another time. We'll do that another time. Tom with a shirt that looks strange and unusual.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Fernandina Beach, Florida. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, how can we help?
Well, thanks for taking the call. I have had this situation for many years in which whenever I sit down to eat, my sinuses fill up. It is most pronounced at dinner, and I have to take an antihistamine and lie down quite often. But it doesn't happen for every dinner. And it doesn't happen, and I can't identify any food that causes it. It'll happen when I have white wine. It'll happen when I have red wine. It'll happen when I have no wine.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't eat anything or drink anything.
That'll take care of it. That's right. Wither away.
Yeah, that'll take care of my weight problem as well.
So you have never seen any pattern to this, whether it's at a restaurant, at home.
That's correct. It's been going on for maybe 20, 30 years, more serious later. And interestingly enough, my sister also had a similar problem where she sneezed repeatedly after a dinner. In fact, my father used to count. He used to say, you can sneeze 7 times. You have to stop after that. Well, of course, it didn't work, but I mean...
So your father would say to your sister, you can sneeze 7 times. I'm trying to picture this at the dinner table. She starts sneezing, he goes 7 times. So everyone would count her sneezes then, right?
That's right. He put his fingers. 1, 2, count.
It's very funny. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what happens with the antihistamine.
Well, I take a pill, and it could be... any one of an assortment of different pills. I've tried different kinds. And if it's real severe, I'll lie down for 5 minutes, and then it tends to clear up, and then I can get up and I go about whatever it is.
I want to talk about some ideas that I have for this, because there are some things that you can do that I think you should try. And, you know, at home, it doesn't sound like it's as much of an issue, and you've been dealing with this forever. It's really the restaurant that produces the issue, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So, first of all, what I would do at a restaurant, go get some Afrin nasal spray, and before you go to a restaurant, spray your nose. That's what I would do. And that's got an 80 to 90% chance of working. I'd keep it in your car. They're cheap. They're inexpensive. Afrin. They're generic. I can't remember the name of the generic name specifically. Omeprazole or something like that. But what I would do is spray it before I go into the restaurant automatically. I wouldn't wait for it to happen. I'd go out with...
Isn't there a rebound effect with Efrin?
Not with one spray. It's not going to do much. You're not going to get a rebound. You know, most people, it's if you use it for 3 days in a row. And so if you're going to restaurants 3 days in a row for three meals, then you'll have to stop using it. So that's really where the rebound. But Efrin may do the trick. Sudafed, by the way, an over-the-counter pill taken an hour or 2 hours before, will also do the trick. And there is a prescription drug, Bentyl, B-E-N-T-Y-L. It's got a generic name, dicyclomine. And Bentyl, which is an anti-parasympathetical, it's a parasympathetical lytic. And if you can pronounce it, you get the drug free. can also work. You have to take it a few hours before. And these are, there's also an old-fashioned drug called probanthene, P-R-O-B-A-N-T-H-E-N-E, which is also a generic, that also works for people who have this problem continuously. And that especially works for the people who sweat, who have gustatory sweating. And you have got a relative of gustatory sweating. And probanthene can be very useful, especially there are a lot of people who it's bothersome. They go on meals with, you know, they get, as I said, mucus or sweating, and they're having trouble. And they go to business meals, and people think that they're nervous, you know, because all of a sudden they've got mucus coming out of the, you know, they misinterpret it. So I've just given you a bunch of drugs, but I would try the Efrin. That's what I would do, and that would work. And, you know, just don't use it at home. And it's been going on for 30 years, so don't expect me to cure it. Treat it. But see if the Efrin works. Let us know. I found that to be very useful.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Like I said, I've got a memory of your sister now sneezing and your father and your father counting.
800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba, as does this listener in West Salem, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I have a problem I hope you can help me with.
I hope we can, too. How can we help?
It's a phlegm problem. Mm-hmm. I get all this stuff, and I have to bring it up, and how it really bothers me is I sing in a choir, a church choir, and I'm not sure if I'll be able to get to the notes, the higher notes, because I have to clear my throat, and sometimes just in clearing doesn't do anything. So anyway, this has been going on for many years, and I don't know. I can't even tell you exactly when it started, but maybe like 1998 or something when I started to have blood pressure medicine. I don't know if that's a factor. I really don't know, but I'd like to be able to, you know, get rid of it.
Yeah. How's your stomach?
My stomach is great.
Your stomach is great.
This is a problem, not being able to sing in a church choir. You don't want to quit the church choir.
No.
Well, I like to be able to sing, period, and, you know. That's where it bothers me. I've been able to live with it, but even talking to you, am I going to have to clear my throat?
Have you ever tried? Have you ever been on Prilosec or Omeprazole at all?
No. No.
I've got a couple of suggestions. A lot of people with phlegm actually have GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease. It is not uncommon. And even though you may not have any stomach problems at all, you may have GERD. And what I would recommend trying, do a trial of this. You buy over-the-counter Prilosec. It's called Omeprazole. Prilosec is P-R-I-L-O-S-E-C. And I would do over-the-counter Prilosec, generic, don't buy the name brand, on an empty stomach, 120-milligram capsule every morning, see what happens. If that fails, I would take a 20-milligram capsule in the morning, and I would take a 20-milligram capsule maybe at 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. Again, on an empty stomach, absorbs better. So I'd put it sort of when you brush your teeth, take your Prilosec. And that may reduce inflammation, if you have GERD, that is going up from the stomach and then irritating the bottom of the trachea, which is then producing mucus. And that is not uncommon. It turns out that is a very common problem with mucus production. Even though you have no symptoms in your stomach, this can be the only symptom that's actually there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Let us know what happens. We'd be interested in knowing.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much for the call.
You know, it's important, like you say, for her to get back singing if she wants to sing, because it's an enjoyable thing to do, and
absolutely,
if we can help her, that really does make a difference.
And before the break, Zorba, let's take a quick question from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health email bag. This question comes from a listener named Tim. He writes, "Hello, Dr. Zorba. I have a question about nitrates in cured meats, such as hot dogs, and a link to leukemia in children. Do you know of any viable research on this? Also, what's your opinion on the matter?"
Well, the issue with nitrates and nitrites is that we know they're associated with cancer. They're carcinogens. Now, the issue is what cancers? And the answer is we don't know. I mean, there's no data or science on it. How big is the theoretical risk of its association with cancer? Well, the theoretical risk is there, and so the more cured meats you eat, the more theoretical risk that's there. And it's a good question with children, because children are developing, they have a long life, and whether or not that connects together, I don't know. Easy to avoid cured meats, you know, chalk the bologna and the sausage and hot dogs. On the other hand, it's hard to toss the hot dogs, but you can get turkey dogs. So I think the jury is out on it, but I think it has a potential, and I think I have to leave it in that gray zone.
Have a potentially meaty question for Zorba. He may just have the cure. Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Interesting research coming up. More of your calls, of course. Our medical Mythbuster 2, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, the World Health Organization made big headlines saying that some cancers are linked to processed red meat.
Right. So so let's look at this, and why they made this statement. First of all, out of the box, the biggest threat, the biggest cause of cancer in the world today still is smoking. And let's not put this anywhere near that.
Some reports have put it exactly there.
Yeah, but it's not there. That's not the case.
Okay.
And the reason is people don't eat... No one, practically no one, has red meat 15 or 20 times a day like they do cigarettes.
Yeah.
And they often don't have red meat 3 times a day. And the amount of colon cancer that's in the world does not compare to the amount of lung cancer. Lung cancer deaths are roughly, so over half the deaths in the world are due to lung cancer. Colon cancer is a slow cancer, and it's very treatable. Lung cancer is a fast cancer that is not treatable. So let's take it out of that realm.
Okay.
But let's look at it in the realm of colon cancer. We know that colon cancer is diet-related. Why? Because the Japanese get esophageal cancer. The Japanese get stomach cancer, rather. The Norwegians get esophageal cancer. And the Americans get colon cancer. So we know there's a dietary issue. We know the Japanese, when they move to Hawaii and start having a Hawaiian diet, go from stomach cancer to colon cancer. So we've always known there's a diet issue. The World Health Organization released this, looking at the fact that processed meats, nitrates and nitrites, which are what are used traditionally, really seem to be more of an issue, and we should give it more credibility. And I think that's really what the issue is.
Yeah, well, we talk all the time about a healthy diet, and we never mention processed
meat. Bologna, that's right. How often do I say, have a BLT and bologna sandwich every day for lunch?
Yeah.
Or let's talk about the bologna and sausage diet along with, along with cotto salami. But I think this is an interesting issue. It's an also interesting issue in that children often get processed meats when they're younger. Maybe we're actually actually, when we're giving them processed red meat, that we're actually giving them the potential for colon cancer 50 years down the line. We don't really know that.
Well, whatever it is, the Red Meat Association came out.
Well, of course. They're saying there's no evidence in that. And they're bunk, too. There is evidence. And there's evidence for years. We've known that the nitrates and nitrites, when you cook bacon and when you barbecue red meat, but in processed meats are an issue. So here's what I think. I think that reduction in processed meats is called for. Now, should you bring it to zero? Yeah, if you want to be really good and perfect about it, yes. But I am going to occasionally have my Chicago hot dog when I want to have it. Now, am I going to have it every day? No. Am I going to pay attention to this? Yes. I'm going to have a more Mediterranean diet and less salami.
800-462-7413 is your number if you have a question for Zorba, as does this listener, Zorba, in Rochester, Minnesota. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Well, I have a question regarding sweeteners and Diet Coke specifically. I went to a physician who was a retired Army doctor a few years ago for a whole workup on 59. And I asked a question about Diet Coke and sweeteners and how much can I drink, and the doctor looked at me and said, you can drink all you want. Now, on the line and the internet and the news, there's all these things about sweeteners and hormone changes and formaldehyde. What is the real answer on sweeteners? Because those of us who are trying to take care of our health are having a difficult time getting the facts.
Right.
What is the bottom line on sweeteners?
Well, the first bottom line on sweeteners, when we look at artificial sweeteners, is that they're artificial. So that's the first thing you have to think about. And when we look at the artificial sweeteners, there is a NutraSweet, which are two amino acids, and we'll talk a bit about that. There's sucralose, which is what's used in Splenda and Splenda generic. There's, I was going to say Trivia. There's, not Trivia. You know, sometimes my brain is not working completely, and it's Trivia. Well, you know, in your brain, sometimes things get connected. I just have to get it the right way.
Are you using sweeteners now?
Well, they're all, yes, I mean, that's right. I'm using sweeteners now. That's exactly it. So they're definitely disturbing to the brain. You've got it. Now, when we look at NutraSweet, which was, you know, which were two amino acids, and we look at, it says aspartame. You can't take it if you end up having a genetic abnormality. There's because you actually can't cleave it, and so there, and it's right on the label. And the question with that has to do with the fact that there is almost a formaldehyde that's produced, a formaldehyde-like substance that's actually produced. And so that was a question, and that's a theoretical question that has been out there. I think it's been answered in the fact that there's an enormous amount used, and we have not seen an uptick in any forms of cancer with that. So I think that question has been answered. It's a very well-supported research when it got produced, and I think people want to have it. Is there a risk? I think it's minimal. I think when it comes to Splenda, there's probably less risk because it's sugar-related, but once again, it's artificial. You know, and when it comes from Truvia, it's the same thing. It's a plant-based product. Now, that's probably the safest because it's a pure plant-based product that is the least artificial of the artificial sweeteners. And I think the processed food companies that produce carbonated drinks have moved more towards that. So I think that's really where it fits. The question is, does it get people to lose weight? And the answer is no. Not at all. There's no evidence since we've started Diet Coke and everything else that people lose weight. In fact, the evidence is the opposite. Since we've been eating artificial sweeteners, we end up gaining more weight than ever before. So what do you like to drink?
I like to drink Diet Coke when I do drink diet soda. I mean, I know the sugar can add up in pounds, and it's, you know, that's one of my ways of getting something sweet. But
I think the risk is so minimal. And when I mention that, I get emails all the time that are, how could you say that? And this is wrong. It's almost as if people own a website and they want to write me and tell me where our website is wrong and, you know, is right, and you're completely wrong. The reality is, it's been studied in hundreds of studies, and it's been around now for 20 years, and if there were a major uptick in cancer, don't you think we would have seen it? And the answer is there isn't. So, you know, choose your poison, you know. And frankly, when I go out, and if I want something sweet, I don't want to have those calories either. I will often have a diet drink, and frankly, I have Diet Coke. That's exactly what I drink.
Now, Zorba, you don't drink Coke that often.
Oh, no, no. I have it very rarely.
If you drink it a lot.
Yes. No, sometimes. No, no. I drink diet soda maybe once a month or twice a month. I hardly drink it at all. And then, of course, there are people who drink it all the time. But once again, you know, the issue is if you're drinking it as part of your weight plan and it works, then do it. But if you don't lose weight drinking it, maybe, you know, that's why water, carbonated beverages and carbonated water that don't have any that do not have any calories have been a boom. And that's why the stock in Coca-Cola and other companies has gone down, because the sweetened and diet sweetened carbonated beverages are definitely going down and have been going down for about 10 years because people have fears about it. And the fact is, if you have a fear about it, don't drink it.
Right. Well, appreciate you taking the time to answer that. It's really good to have you out there as a resource. So thank you very much for your time and for your answers.
Thank you.
Yeah, we do appreciate the call. And Zorba, time again now for our Medical Myth Buster segment. Today's question is from a listener named Susan. Dr. Pastor, I have had a couple people, including a physician's assistant, tell me to put a bar of Ivory soap in my bed to reduce leg cramps. I cannot imagine how a bar of Ivory soap can influence leg cramps. So, truth or myth?
Well, first of all, if you put a bar of Ivory soap and you get rid of your leg cramps and you sleep through the night, by all means, you should do it. That's exactly it. There's no doubt. I put that in the same category as voodoo dolls. that's what I would say. I cannot imagine how Ivory soap in any way, because it doesn't even have a smell like Dial soap, will possibly influence your leg cramps. But if you want to do it, by all means, do it. Because leg cramps, maybe for some people, are under some psychological aspect. You finally get into bed and you go, oh, thank you. I finally have Ivory soap there. I can relax. So by all means, do it, please.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to tackle? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or put it on Facebook.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
So I have been having something where I've been doing every test known to man, and since I'm a fan of your show and have listened to you help lots of people that have this sort of thing, I wanted to see if you had other ideas. Mm-hmm. I have a history of chronic migraines, so I have a neurologist that I regularly see, but I noticed that I was having some numbness in my left toe, and I really didn't think anything of it until I went to the neurologist, who said, I think it's just part of your migraines. But it had spread to my left hand and then my right toe. At the same time, I also was just totally exhausted, so I had very extreme fatigue. And so when I went to see the neurologist, you know, he got a little suspicious and was very concerned, and I also had some blurred vision at times. So he started investigating what this possibly was. By then, my reflex at the bottom of my foot was gone, so I think that's the ankle reflex. So it didn't move like you would normally. During that set of tests, my LP was normal. My MRI, my brain scans, we already knew had lesions on them, but those can be consistent with migraine. And my spinal MRI was clear.
The main complaint now that you have is what?
The exhaustion, honestly, is the one that most affects my life. The spreading numbness, I think, is the one that most concerns the doctors.
So I'm going to give a couple suggestions. First of all, we don't know what causes the numbness. We don't. 10 years of MRIs have not shed light, and therefore we don't know. You know, admit that. Fatigue and other things we don't really understand well. There's chronic fatigue syndrome, but that's a very specific syndrome. We don't know what it is. Some doctors poo-poo it and don't think it exists. I think it really does exist. It can masquerade as depression. You know, after 10 years, you would know if you had depression that caused this fatigue. So you're in the great unknown. You probably don't have MS, but sometimes MS can appear over time, and there's only a certain amount of sensitivity in the machines. So in other words, you know, there it's very reassuring that you don't have anything on your brain MRI scan. But sometimes serial MRI scans after you've actually had the symptoms will help determine whether or not it is. I do not know what the pickup rate is for MRI scans and multiple sclerosis, but it's not 100%. There's no test that is 100%. So in other words, you could still have MS and it's not been picked up. And I know that's not reassuring, but that is certainly a possibility. When we can't figure out symptoms and they're funky, we always think MS because it masquerades as a bunch of other things. I don't know how to connect this to fatigue, but a lot of people with MS do have fatigue. A lot of people with MS have depression. A lot of people with MS have other issues. So I think that still is a possibility, and we just haven't found it, and it may appear over time when you have scans in the future. For the fatigue, which is the main issue, I would make sure I got enough sleep. I would, if I have fatigue, I nap in the middle of the day. I'm a very productive person. I don't feel bad when I nap. I don't feel like I'm wasting my time. I feel like I'm actually doing a better job. And I am a great proponent of caffeine. I think caffeine is the wonder drug of the world. And I drink it in the morning. Sometimes I drink it in the afternoon, too. That's what I would do. Exercise, the usual stuff we do for fatigue. And I would give up trying to figure out what it is for well, because I don't think you're going to find it. You may later on in a few years, but you're not going to find it now. That's not reassuring. We'd love to have a diagnosis and we'd like to have a number, but I think that's what your reality is now. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And before we head out today, Zorba, how about we let one of our listeners give us a piece of their mind in a segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's disagreement is from a listener named Nathan. He writes, "You were speaking about coconut oil on a recent show. You dismissed the notion of virgin coconut oil being any different from non-virgin oil. This is a broad category, but there are significant differences. Mm-hmm. If a consumer were to use no discretion when purchasing this oil, they could end up with a product that was processed with solvents, etc. Virgin coconut oil means the manufacturer used fresh coconut, not copa, which is dried coconut."
Oh. Copa is dried coconut?
Beats me.
Oh.
you're the doc.
It beats me. I was just asking a question, so I was asking you that. I should have known better than to ask you about coconut. But I thought maybe you know. Do you know about coconut?
I have no idea.
You know something?
They taste pretty good.
You know something? This deserves more research. We're going to bring this up at one of the later shows about the difference between, because I know nothing about this.
Yeah.
Virgin and extra virgin. Is it a marketing tool? Or does it actually correspond to something else and the analysis? We're going to talk about this on a future show. I don't know the answer, but you know what? I'm going to look it up. I'm going to do my due diligence.
As you always do. Do you disagree with something Zorba said? Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email
to Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org
or
Facebook.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sedrin. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1202Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.